Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is singer-songwriter Imogen Clark. Though she grew up in Australia, she recently relocated to Nashville, arriving just in time to see her career take flight. She toured extensively throughout 2024, and now is poised to release the new album, Choking on Fuel, which finds her performing songs in a stripped-back manner, though she's joined by luminaries such as Jim Lauderdale, Mickey Raphael from Willie Nelson's band, and Tommy Emmanuel. The album is out May 30th, and then Clark will return to the road, taking on dates throughout much of the remainder of the year. In this conversation, we discussed her relocation to Nashville, the relationship between Australia and America when it comes to country music, as well as opening dates for the legendary Robin Hitchcock and her friendship with fellow singer-songwriter Emma Swift. All that and more on this episode of Into Music, coming up now. Was the music of coming out of Nashville, like when you were younger or maybe first starting to play, was that inspirational to you?
Definitely. Coming over here, when I came here for the first time, I was 19. So it was so much fun and a completely unknown world to me because I didn't even know what the term Americana music meant. I'd never heard that before. I didn't know that was a thing. And when I first came over here for Americana Festival, it kind of made me realize that was the sort of music that I was writing. And that was a bit of a It was a very inspirational time seeing all those other artists perform and being able to be amongst that, but it also just gave me a bit of a sense of belonging for the first time in a musical genre that I hadn't felt before.
There is this tradition in Australia of music that is, well, it's country music, and it is very close to what we refer to as Americana, even though obviously we're, you know, so far away, but the music is the same.
It's true. We borrow so many things from American culture, and like as we grow up in Australia, we have so much American pop culture and media that we feed off of. And so I think we naturally have a lot of country that's very American sounding in Australia. And I think it was so fun for me to be here for the first time and be like, this is where all of this stuff comes from, you know, like it was kind of incredible. It was a learning experience for sure.
There is a lot of space in Australia, of course, once you're outside of the cities, which I think is important to have that music where there's space as well. It's like, I would imagine, somewhat inspirational.
That's right. I think Americana and country music has a good following in Australia for that reason, because we have so much space and so many farms and wide open spaces, and kind of like rural living is something that so many people in our country understand. And so I think that kind of relating to the everyman, the working class, you know, person who's making a living for themselves on the land, you know, that's a very understandable topic for people in Australia. So I understand that, you know, I understand the tendency towards country music for sure.
So you had like a kind of an exciting 2024, right? There were, tell us about that.
It was probably the biggest year of my life to date. And I'm just planning on making this year even bigger. But 2024 was huge. I, of course, moved to Nashville quite early in the year. I followed that up almost immediately by releasing a new album called The Art of Getting Through. And I was pretty much straight into playing shows for that record around town here in Nashville and also in the UK. I did a big UK tour and a tour around the US opening for Robin Hitchcock, and then another tour of the UK opening for Kezia Gill, and then back to Australia for some shows in November to launch the album. So it was a massive year and not much sleep, but lots of fun.
A little bit of jealousy on the well, on all of it, but especially the Robin Hitchcock front. That had to be a pretty unique experience.
It was so much fun, and I had gotten to know Robin just a little bit before the tour through his lovely wife and excellent artist in her own right, Emma Swift. And Emma and I knew each other from early days, my first sort of times coming over to Nashville, and she's of course Australian as well. And so meeting Robin through Emma was so wonderful because I felt that he's just an artist that I can think of none other like him. He's one of those people that is exactly who he is, and he has such wonderfully like eccentric songs, and he's such an interesting live performer and so entertaining. And so getting to open all those shows for him was really fun, and getting to know him better and travel with him, and also getting to meet his fans because they are some of the most intelligent, lyrically interested, supportive, lovely people I've ever met. You know, after every show, I'd go out to the merch table and I'd meet just hordes of really lovely people. It was just so much fun.
And they were welcoming too, because sometimes, right, opening slots, it's like the audience is there to see the headliner.
Oh, it is absolutely not always that wonderful of an experience. And I've been really lucky in my career, both here in the States and in Australia, to have opened for some people who are so lovely and whose fans are really lovely. Like, I feel very lucky and grateful for that. But it definitely isn't always like that. Like, I've had a couple of experiences where people yell for the main act when you're on the stage, and it's quite confronting. It definitely gives you a thick skin.
Well, so I'll move on from Hitchcock here, but the one thing I've always wanted to know is where in the world he gets those amazing shirts.
Oh my gosh, he is one of the best dressed men. I love his t-shirts, and his love of polka dots is so much fun. I saw him perform at a Bob Dylan related event at the Country Music Hall of Fame just yesterday or the day before, and he was wearing these fantastic pink suede shoes, and I was like, this man is unstoppable.
So you had that wonderful year, and then at some point you knew that you had to kind of you or you wanted to make another record. So what did that look like in terms of like starting it and thinking about, okay, how's this one going to be different or so on?
Yeah, so this record is quite unique in that I've never made a record like this before. It is reimaginings of some songs from my previous album. So they're stripped back, more intimate versions of songs from my latest record. And so, you know, it was quite challenging in a really fun way to look at the songs that, you know, already exist in the public space and have already had somewhat of a smaller life so far, and totally like change our perspective on them and recreate them as something new. And it actually was a wonderful way of giving some of the songs an extended life, but also kind of a new meaning. Like, the way that they've been produced is different and more intimate, and that kind of naturally puts a spotlight on different elements of the song, and like the context sort of changes. And it's been such a fun experience, and I think that's why, you know, we made this record quite quickly, because also I had been experiencing a lot of solo touring where I was, you know, playing by myself without a full band, without anyone accompanying me live. And we wanted to make a record that really it sort of represented that side of me as well.
What is that like for you to, you know, just kind of be out there, and it's like you don't, if something goes wrong, it's just you. And when something goes right, it's also just you.
Yeah, it's kind of a terrifying, like, as someone that has, you know, made no secret of the fact that I've suffered from anxiety most of my life, I'm sometimes like befuddled by my own career choice. I'm like, why did I do this? This is a weird thing for someone with anxiety to do. But I kind of strangely, it's like a place where I'm so comfortable on stage, even when it's just me. I feel like it's a very validating and therapeutic experience for me. And even when it's just me on stage, I feel like the connection with the audience is always so warm and like gives me so much satisfaction and fulfillment. And so I think, it's scary and sometimes better not to think too much about the fact that it's like, okay, I'm just going to sit on a stage with a guitar or maybe a keyboard and entertain people for the next hour and a half with no one else to help me. But it's somewhat of a, it's something that I've come to really, really appreciate and be very comfortable with.
I think it's interesting because I think, that expression, out of your element. And I think sometimes that I don't know, for me, that anxiety is like, comes to the fore in the grocery store or the gas station. But if you put me in a room with 50 people, I'm just like, hello.
Yeah, isn't that so funny the way these things pop up? I think the traditional idea of like anxiety is that you get, public speaking and you're freaked out about being in rooms full of people and social situations. And I think what we've come to learn is that so many people, like both of us, it sounds, have anxiety that relates a bit more to like menial tasks that maybe won't wouldn't necessarily pop up on someone else's radar as being like hugely scary. But that stuff sometimes, you can be like quite an extroverted person and you can have conversations easily. And I feel like I'm fine with that sort of stuff. But then with things like going to the doctor or whatever it might be, that's where I struggle.
Yeah. So with this record, you also have some guests on here. Tell us about some of the guests on the record.
Yeah, so I'm really lucky. This record has been just absolutely blessed with some of the loveliest musicians and some incredible people. I've got a song on the record that I wrote with Jim Lauderdale. Lucky enough to have the wonderful Jim singing backing vocals on this song, singing it with me, and also the accompaniment has been done by Tommy Emmanuel, which is just, a huge deal for me as someone who's grown up looking to Tommy Emmanuel as an Australian who has moved to the States and made it big for himself and is one of the best musicians to ever live. So that's incredible. And I've got there's been just such a wonderful bunch of musicians that I've gotten to play with on this record and some others that are still yet to be announced, but it's very exciting and I can't wait for people to hear it all.
I mean, Jim Lauderdale, writing with him, I mean, I would have to think on some level, maybe going into a room with him, I would probably be like, you've written so many songs.
Totally. I mean, I feel like Jim Lauderdale has written more, has had more cuts and written more songs with people than like he's probably forgotten more songs than he has ever, like he's just like the most prolific songwriter. And I love working with Jim. We've toured together actually in the past where I've opened for him and also toured where I've played in his band, which is something I do as well. And he's just a wonderful man. And it's just so gracious and lovely to work with. And he's so funny to be around as well. He's always cracking jokes.
What does the rest of 2025 look like for you? The record's, as we're talking today, the record's not out yet, but it will be, when this comes out. What happens?
I have, some gigs coming up in Nashville, but until so when the record comes out, I'll then shortly after that be going on tour again in the UK, which I'm really excited about. I love getting back to the UK in summer. It's such a wonderful time to tour there. I've also got a tour lined up back in Australia for October, and that's going to be a co-headline tour with my friend Kezia Gill, who I've toured with before. But in between some shows here in the US and my new hometown of Nashville, trying to play here as much as I can, and yeah, it's shaping up to be another big year, to be honest.
Do you have a sense, like, maybe before last year or something? Was there ever a time where you were like, okay, when's this going to happen?
Yes. I feel like most of my life, most of my professional life has involved me sort of having those feelings, like I think most artists and most creative people have, of sort of going, well, when is the next, you know, sort of waiting for the other shoe to drop, or when's the next thing going to happen, and when's this next, when am I going to move up to this level, and when am I going to achieve this goal? And I think what I've come to become a little bit better at as I've gotten older is the idea of looking backwards a little bit rather than always looking forwards. And by that I mean actually kind of giving yourself credit for the things you've achieved and taking a moment to appreciate those, rather than just always going, okay, that's done, on to the next thing, and not actually taking a moment to look at where you've been and be proud of yourself and celebrate the wins. And so I'm always looking to the next thing and always working towards the next thing, and I always have goals, but I'm also so proud of where I am and what I've achieved so far. And I think if me at 20 could see me now at 30, she'd be very proud and excited.
You've been listening to a conversation with Imogene Clark. Imogene Clark's new album, Choking on Fuel, is out May 30th. You can learn more about her at her official website, ImogeneClarkMusic.com. Our digital producers are Carly Cooper, Beth Golay, and Hugo Fan. Our theme music is composed and performed by Torin Anderson. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org. Thanks again for listening. We will see you next time.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you were going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.